Welcome to this Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, episode number 34. Welcome to this week's episode. I'm sorry that it's very late. It's taken me about 3 or 4 days longer than usual to get around to actually recording this. I've been very busy this week, and some website problems stopped me from completing it last night as well. So sorry about that. But to get on with today's topic, I'm going to be talking about eyes in images. It's been said that the eyes are the windows to the soul, and when shooting subjects with eyes, ensuring that they are sharp is the key to good images. When we look at photos with eyes in them, our own eyes automatically search them out, and quickly. Let's take a look at a number of real-world examples to reinforce this statement. So firstly, I've not mentioned how to view the images for a few weeks, so here goes for new listeners. If you're at a computer, the best way to be listening to this podcast is by clicking the orange stream podcast button next to the episode on the podcast page at martinbaileyphotography.com. That way the image thumbnails in the streaming audio player will change as I talk about them, and you can just click on the thumbnail to view the image full size. If you don't want to use the streaming audio option, you can click the thumbnail also provided next to the episode itself. If you are listening in iTunes, you can click through the thumbnails with a little left and right arrow above the thumbnail as I talk about them, and then click on the thumbnail itself to view it full size. If you are listening on an iPod, you'll only see the first image that I'll talk about. You can't see any of the other images after that. You'll have to go back to your PC for iTunes or the website to actually continue to view the rest of the photos. But I don't really worry about this too much, although I'm sure some of you do. But I don't worry about it so much because the images really can't be appreciated at the size that you can view them on an iPod anyway, so I suggest you go to the website no matter what. Finally, I'll mention a number each time we move to a new image, so you can actually also go to my website and enter that number into a field on the top page or at the top of the podcast page on my website, and then click the orange button that's next to the field or hit enter, and you'll jump to the image as well. So firstly, let's take a look at image number 350. Those of you that are familiar with this creature will know immediately, but this is a close-up of an alligator's eye. I shot this from a converted school bus with no windows on a tourist safari in the Everglades National Park in Florida. I always thought that alligators usually shuffle along on their bellies, close to the ground and with their legs out to the sides to move. And this is true, I'm sure, when they're not in a hurry, but I was amazed to see with my own eyes that this guy actually raised his bulk up on all fours and ran towards the bus, much as a large dog would. If I recall correctly, it was straight after this show of strength that I shot this. The alligator stopped close to the side of the bus so I could get a shot that I'd really wanted the most when I planned this trip. As you might recall, if you listened to episode 1 of this podcast, I have a thing about animals' eyes. I don't know what they are thinking when they regard us as they do, but I'm sure that they're thinking something, and you can get just an inkling of that when you look into their eyes. If you are lucky enough to get a shot of them close up like this, you can inspect that further in the safety of your own home later. Of course, we humans tend to personify our subjects and imagine what they're thinking or what they might be thinking from our own perspectives and with our own values and knowledge of the world. This is, of course, rarely going to be the case, but I still enjoy thinking of what they might be thinking. This guy to me is thinking something like, Well, I just charged them down and showed them my worst, and they're all just sitting there still. Why haven't they run away screaming? And what's that guy doing there pointing that big shiny white tube at me and clicking away like a nutter? Something like that. I think we tend to personify animals not just because of their eyes, but because of their perceived expressions as well. This alligator, for example, might be smirking. You can see the line of its mouth curving along the side of its face in a wave shape, looking as though he's actually smirking. Probably thinking again, oh well, I'll just have to try and scare the next busload of tourists later. Something like that. So, something else that we should pay attention to is how we tend to search out eyes in an image. This particular photo has lots of shiny areas and highlights, so it takes some people a little while longer to find the eyes, but I'm sure if you've just looked at this image on your computer, it didn't take many seconds before you got to the eye and started to inspect it. You probably then looked around the detail of the eyelids, and once you got your orientation, because there's no, you can't see the outside of the head here to immediately see that it exactly what it is. But once you've got your orientation within the image, you probably started to look at, for the other eye. You'll have found the eyelid and maybe were a little disappointed when you couldn't see the other eye. This was intentional. You will start to inspect the eye or inspect the rest of the detail in this image, the scales and the bumps and the overall glossy feel. I shot this at 400mm with my 100-400mm lens at f5.6 for 1/250th of a second. There was plenty of available light, so the ISO was set at 100. The exposure compensation was actually set to -1/3 to keep the black dark, but it was not necessary to go further as the bright shiny areas of this subject balanced out the exposure somewhat. The widest aperture for this focal length is 5.6 with this particular lens, but that also helped me to start to blur out the parts of the alligator's head further from, you know, for anything further back from the eyes, which helps to draw us back to the eyes a little. Let's move on to another shot, number 566. This beautiful bird of prey was sitting on the falconer's glove, maybe about 5 feet in front of me. This was right actually close to the closest focusing limit on my 100-400mm lens, and I shot this again at 400mm at 1/1250th of a second. I had my ISO set to 200, but I must admit that I was so excited at having this wonderful specimen in front of me that I wasn't too worried about dropping the ISO to 100, which I could have without problems. I'd been shooting at ISO 200 more to capture these guys in flight. This particular bird is actually a TV star here in Japan. If you live in Japan, keep your eyes open for the Shiranami Shochu or white liquor commercial. The hawk you see flying around and one close-up, maybe two close-ups, is actually this particular animal. You can probably see why he was chosen. Beautiful markings and that sparkling yellow eye just draws you in. This brings me to something else that I mentioned in the intro. When there are eyes in the frame, unless you are trying something particular, you should always make sure that you focus on them and just get them as sharp as possible. As I've said, we tend to search out the eyes. This is instinctual for us and many other animals to look out for eyes, as they tell us where the animals in our sight are looking. If they're looking at us, they may well be about to attack us, and this is why being stared at makes us uncomfortable, for example. Most species of monkeys, I believe, consciously avoid eye contact because of the threatening connotations. In some cultures of us humans, the culture will actually use eye contact to gauge trust. Others are uncomfortable with excessive eye contact as well. Anyway, getting back to the hawk, I was lucky to have a lawn in the background here, And as lawns in Japan go a golden yellowy brown in winter, the tones are very similar to that of the hawk itself, and the aperture that was set to 5.6 threw it totally out of focus to allow us to concentrate on the subject and that big yellow eye. Remember, keeping them sharp should be paramount in your mind when shooting. Whether your subject is a reptile, bird, mammal, insect, human, or whatever. If the eyes are not sharp, they'll look dead, and our image will die with them. So, we've just looked at the first two, a reptile and a bird example. Let's take a look at an insect example, with shot number 459. Now, technically, this is not a great shot. I'd not long had my 100mm macro lens that I used to shoot this, and I'd only just got my macro twin light, MT-24EX, and I was very much still experimenting with it. One thing I was bearing in mind is the very shallow depth of field in macro shots, and so I'd chosen an aperture of f10, and the exposure time was 1/100th of a second. That was actually to match the focal length, but there's I probably would have preferred a little bit more. If I had not been using a flash, I would have obviously needed more. But I think even now with a flash, I would have used a shutter speed of 1/200th of a second, or maybe even 1/250th of a second. There was no exposure compensation as I was in manual mode, and I was allowing the camera to set the correct exposure by adjusting the intensity of the flash. If I'd shot this now, I would have almost certainly tried a shot or two with my 550EX flash unit triggered wirelessly from the twin light to illuminate the background. I kind of like the sinister dark background in this shot, so I'm not sure which I'd have used, but I regret not thinking to at least try this at the time. Had the spider hung around long enough, that is. Another thing when working at this distance, especially when hand-holding, is that it's difficult to focus accurately. But the F10 aperture allowed me to get most of the hairy front legs there and the eyes right back from the legs to the eyes in focus. In this shot you can see four of the spider's eyes, but jumping spiders, which this is, actually have eight eyes, two others on each side of the head and two more on the back of its head. The only other animal that I know that has eyes in the back of its head is my mum. Forget that one. Next up is the image that I introduced way back in September 2005 in that very first podcast, and this is number 595. This is one of my favourite images. I titled it The Pink Flamingo Stare. To briefly recap, I shot this at 400mm with an aperture of 5.6 for 800th of a second at ISO 200. Minus 1/3 exposure compensation helped to saturate that shocking pink, and the low angle of the sun at this time of the day helped me to make the eye stand out a little by giving us that bit of shadow across the eye. I won't dwell on this shot, as I've spoken about it at length in that very first episode, but I do just want to say that I like this image because of that pensive look on the flamingo's eye. Again, it appears to be regarding me, and it's easy to imagine things that might be going through its mind as this weirdo in a geeky vest waves a white tube at it. And of course, the shallow depth of field helps us to keep our focus on the eye. Once again, think of your path, or the path your eye will take around this image as you first look at it in your computer screen. For this shot, there is no ambiguity. There's little to draw your attention to anything in the image other than going straight to the eye, which is, I'm sure, what you looked at first without hesitation. You probably then started looking around for other lines in the image to walk your eyes along, and you may well have found the pinkish white flesh along the front of the flamingo's face and then moved across the feathers in the foreground to the sharpest, darker feathers in the front left of the frame. You may have gone the other way around. You might have started jumping back straight to the front left and then moving around back to the pinkish flesh and then back up to the eye. And, you know, you may have also explored the blurred lines across the top of the flamingo's head too. But I'll bet you one thing. Whatever you looked at after initially looking at the eye, you will have come back to the eye. Eyes get more attention than anything else. So we've looked at a number of nature shots. Let's now look briefly at some human portraits. Firstly, let's take a look at shot number 723. This is one of the shots I spoke about in episode 9, in which I mentioned many of the attempts at portraiture during a brief trip to India. As you know, portraiture is not a strong area for me, though I do try on occasion. This particular image of a man polishing the spanners he's peddling is to me one of the shots that I can look back on from the trip and see, not just from his surroundings, but from his yellow, tired-looking eyes, that this guy has a tough life. When I knelt down in front of him, I gestured that I wanted to take a photo and asked if it was okay, and he gave me one of those sideways shakes of the head, which, although looks more like shaking the head in objection, actually signifies consent in India. I focused on the eyes and then recomposed to get the whole scene in focus, snapped a frame or two and then repeated the process, going back, focusing on the eyes and then recomposing. I had focused on the eyes instinctively, but as you can see from the shot, the F10 aperture had meant that most of the shot was in focus anyway. This is something else that I regret in hindsight. I could have opened the aperture to f5.6 or f4 and still have had enough detail in the rest of the shot in the surroundings to appreciate this man's environment. I guess I'll just have to slate this one down to experience too, and I'll try and take a few different approaches next time. When I'd done, I lowered my head in appreciation and said thank you, and I got another one of those sideways head shakes. The man's expression didn't change at all through the whole thing. It was probably only 20 seconds or so, maybe 30, but his expression was unchanged throughout the whole time. I felt humbled with all of my camera equipment, this expensive equipment hanging off me, and at the same time, this man has struggled to make a living. I have to admit, though, that there's one thing that bothers me about what I've just said. That is that I may be reading more into this man's plight than is actually true. I doubt that he's a very wealthy man. We can see that from his clothes. But he may well have a pretty normal living standard in this town. He definitely has either enough money to buy a hell of a lot of spanners to peddle, or has a job working for someone that has a similar amount of money. Why do I read so much into this guy's plight? He looks tired and troubled. And that's how I'm going to think of him. But I'm getting most of this from his eyes and the expression on his face around them. Let's look at another portrait from this trip, taken a short while after the last, which is image number 728. This time I'd found two boys. Well, actually, they'd kind of found me. They were all for me photographing them and started laughing and jumping around as I approached, a foreigner with a camera. I was trying to get a moment when both boys' eyes were in view, but the boy to the left was intent on showing off his paper toy that he had expanded and contracted continuously. The result is that I got a wonderful smile from the boy on the right and just one eye of the boy to the left. The single eye actually adds a little enigmatic charm, I think, though, so I'm happy with the result. We wonder what the rest of the boy's face looks like, building it up in our imagination from what we can see of his cheek and part of his brow. We can also see that he's smiling, just from the shape being made in his face around the eye. I'd say that you, like me, are exploring the partially covered face, though, only after taking at least a long glance at the wonderful, cute face of the boy to the right, that we can see more easily and entirely. The shooting details for this shot briefly are f4 for 80th of a second. Focal length is 92 millimeters, and the ISO was set to 200. The last image today, number 758, was shot in a village in northern Japan called Ojijuku. I asked if I could photograph this lady, and she said, who me, initially? You want to photograph this old lady? With a momentary show of embarrassment only, though. Then she smiled broadly for the camera. I liked this shot because of the connection I made with the subject. I also wanted to note that although we can't really see this lady's eyes very well at all, just some dark spots really, they still drag us into the image searching for them. I'd say that the large smile grabs us equally as much at first though, if not more than the eyes on this occasion. But then we are dragged up in search of the eyes themselves. We find them due to the expression on the eyes and the scrunched up look on the lady's face, and we get reinforcement of the genuineness of the smile from them. I added one-third exposure compensation as the light background would have thrown this lady into darkness, but one thing I have until now always forgotten to mention is that I tend to use center-weighted metering most of the time. I never use evaluative metering, so all the time when I quote how much I'm compensating, you really need to bear in mind that I'm getting my reading from more towards the center of the frame and not an average of the whole frame. Another thing with this shot is that I was using my 50mm f1.4 lens shooting at f2, and that helped me to throw the bright cluttered background out of focus enough to stop it from over distracting. ISO was 100 and the shutter speed was 1/200th of a second. So there we have seven images, which of all the images on my website I decided to single out to talk about with regards to eyes. Eyes are part of many, many images, and I really just want to say, get them sharp and keep your subjects and images alive. You all know that portraiture is not one of my strong areas by far, but I chose to include a few examples anyway, because human eyes are more expressive than most animals, even though we can personify animals quite easily and often do because of their eyes. Okay, so that's almost it for this week. Once again, I'm sorry for the episode being late this week. Also, remember that there are just a few days left now until we stop taking entries for the contrasting colours assignment. Just about wherever you are in the world, you'll be able to upload until midnight on April 30th. That's this coming Sunday. Then I'll lock the forum and voting will start. There'll be a small black vote button, it actually says vote, V-O-T-E, above the photo when viewed full size. That's after you've clicked the thumbnail. And you will be able to change your vote after you've voted until the end of the 14th of May. So you'll have 2 weeks to vote. And then I'll stop the vote and I'll change the assignments album so that you can start making comments and rating and discuss the images as you do any of the other images in the members forum, the members gallery, sorry. And then also at that time, probably in the podcast of the 15th or 16th, whichever day I manage to get it out, I'll announce the winner. Finally, if you haven't already completed the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast listeners survey and you can spare 5 minutes, please locate the link to the survey in the small podcast section on the top of the on my top page, or link to a larger graphic on the podcast page and complete it for me. I've also posted an announcement in the forum about this with a link, so I'll put a link to that post in the show notes. Completing the survey will allow me to learn more about you and hopefully help me find a sponsor for this podcast at some point. There is actually a minimum number of posts of completed surveys, that is necessary before I can even start to advertise to get advertisers, and at the moment we're only around halfway there. There's only actually about 5% of your listeners that have completed the survey for me. So if you are listening to the show and you've got any feelings that you want to pay me back in any way at all, please go off and complete the survey. Anyway, once again, good luck with the assignment. We've got a few more days left. There are lots of new entries in there that have shown up this last week. It's getting very exciting, so I'm looking forward to seeing the flurry of entries over this next few days. Whatever you do, if you're not even interested in the assignment, whatever you do, have a great week, and I'll speak to you again in a few days, hopefully with a not late episode next Monday or Tuesday. Bye-bye.